Welcome to our second hour of the Global Research News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. It really is a great honor and privilege for me to have a man on who I've admired for a very long time. He's a distinguished Israeli historian. His name is Alain Pappé. He taught in Israel for a good while. He's now living in the UK, teaching at the University of Exeter. He chairs the Department of History. He's the co-director of the Exeter Center for Ethno-Political Studies. Formerly, he was the academic head and the founder of the Institute for Peace Studies in Givat Haviva, Israel. And he was chair of the Emil Tuma Institute for Palestinian Studies in Haifa. Very important is that Ilan is a distinguished academic. He's a human rights activist. He believes in the things that we want to get across to listeners on this program. People matter, human rights matter, freedom and justice matters, and it matters for everybody, not just for some and not for others. And that holds, I think, especially in the part of the world I focus a good deal of my own writing on, Israel, Palestine, and the terrible conflict that's gone on for some time, over six decades now. Alain, are you on with me?
Yes, I'm with you. Can you hear me?
Oh, I can hear you just fine. I welcome you very warmly to the program. Let me mention that we have commercial breaks, and we take one in a minute or so. When we hear the music come on, they'll cut away and they'll take a commercial, and then we'll come back. But we have plenty of time to talk about the vitally important subject of Israel-Palestine and the intractable conflict that you are so passionate on. And people like you inspire me to do the little that I've done on that topic, and your writing and all of your work and so on. A very warm welcome.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be on your program.
Oh, thank you, Alain. The book that really made such a big impact on me was The Ethnic Cleansing of Palestine. Maybe we can talk a little bit about that, but also
indeed
talk about what's going on now. It was a big part of my education. It was a great eye opener for someone like you to get hold of the kind of information you found and to talk about what went on leading to the creation of the State of Israel in May 1948. The literal displacement and murder of around 800,000 people, all kind of washed over by history. And you reveal this and how it all began, and people like David Ben-Gurion, the George Washington of Israel, and the other people who planned this thing and have led up to what we face today, the terrible situation that began then.
Indeed.
The information you have in it, Alain, I've quoted. I reviewed the book shortly after it came out. I've quoted you a number of times in things that I've written. And, what's happening today. The conflict began, and it never ended. 1967 picked it up even more intensively when what was the original Palestine, pre-1948, was reduced to about 22% of the original territory. And since then, Palestinians have continued to be displaced more and more and more as Israel first colonized a little bit of Gaza and extensively in the West Bank. And they want all of Jerusalem, and they keep taking more and more of the choice land. Let's take a brief break and come back, and I want you to talk about what's going on.
Okay.
We'll be right back.
Excellent.
Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. I'm on with Alain Pappé. The program, as always, is an initiative of globalresearch.ca. I always stress, urge people to discover the website and all the information on it. It seems to grow in popularity more and more all the time. The reason is because of the material on it. And I contribute a very small way. I'm very proud to be able to do it. My co-host, Michelle Chosudovsky, does an extraordinary job on the site. And it's a treasure trove of information. Ellen, let me get you into this, and you have a recent article. I don't know if it's your most recent. It goes back to June 16th. You wrote an article called The Israeli Recipe for 2008, Genocide in Gaza, Ethnic Cleansing in the West Bank, and I couldn't agree with you more. Maybe you could talk about that a little bit.
Yes, indeed. I think that the Israeli policymakers, and it doesn't really matter who exactly is now the prime minister and who would be the next prime minister, so let us call them the political elite, because more or less the people who are at the center of decision-making in Israel come from a very limited group, and they keep alternating between themselves, but they have no serious differences of opinion. So if we look at this group, and we look at the group of the generals who are running the army, I think this group, all in all, has a strategy, a kind of a strategy for the areas Israel occupied in 1967, a strategy that developed throughout the years, but I think in the recent year or so has been articulated more clearly than ever before. And that strategy is to try and divide the West Bank into two parts, one which would be directly annexed to Israel and drive out the Palestinians who live in this part to the other part. And the other part, they would like to enclave it, to imprison it, as they already do it, to be in a way that would disable the people there from developing any normal life, and would, in time, it doesn't have to be in the short run, but in time, would probably allow Israel to take that part as well. Because there is a geographical continuity between the West Bank and the Jordan, or the state of Jordan, the Kingdom of Jordan, I think the hope is that eventually that part would either be annexed to Jordan, or that the people who live in it would move to Jordan. However, in the Gaza Strip, they have a problem. They cannot divide the Gaza Strip into two. It's too small. Nor can they hope that the Egyptians would either take the people who live in Gaza into Egypt, or would be interested in taking any part of the Gaza Strip under direct Egyptian control. So what they have done in Gaza is lock it and encircle it with an electric fence, with only two gates open in the north and in the south. And the people who live in this huge prison, which is called the Gaza Strip, I think that for the Israelis are such a nuisance that they have no idea, mainly because they have no idea of how to deal with them, especially since the people who live there are now under the control or the guidance of the political Islamic group, the Hamas, who won the democratic elections there. And the Hamas is fighting back against this Israeli closure and imprisonment. And whether it is an official policy or not, it doesn't really matter. But the only way the Israelis can act, or feel that they can act in the last year or so, is by retaliating to any show of resistance from the Hamas government by massive military brutality, which translates into massive killings. And I think that although this is not a genocidal action as such, namely it's not a genocide of people in one operation or one action, the cumulative effect of the Israeli policies is that of a genocidal policy. And it's mainly because, not because I think there is an intention to exterminate the people who live there, but because there is no alternative that they can see, that is the political and military elite can see forward, and this translates into reacting very brutally to any form of resistance from the Gaza Strip, and we have seen an escalating massive killing of civilians in the last year or so.
It's a subject that few people in this country here, Ilan, know about. They get reports on Palestinians firing rockets. They have no idea that these are basically small homemade crude rockets and what they face. They don't want conflict with anybody. They simply want to live in peace. This is their land. They have no desire to have a battle with anybody. Hamas that you mentioned, there was a democratic election that Israel tried its best to engineer for Mahmoud Abbas, and it came out the wrong way. Hamas won back in January 2006. They've been demonized ever since. Hamas would like to get along with Israel. Israel won't allow it. I think even more than Israel, Ilan, Washington won't allow it. The Hamas government represents the Palestinian people. It wasn't that way in the past, and the Abbas government is very happy to go along with Israel for the benefits they get, including stories about Abbas becoming very, very wealthy, having offshore bank accounts with heaven knows how much money in them. They pay their conspirators very well. Meanwhile, all these crimes are going on. People don't realize that Israel has a tiny country of Israel that's about the size of the state of New Jersey, has a population that's about the size of greater Chicago, is the world's fourth most powerful military. They have every imaginable kind of sophisticated weapon. They're a nuclear power. the great hidden truth that everybody knows about. They're also the world's fourth largest arms supplier, which is really incredible. They're a greater arms exporter than the country you live in now, Ilan, the United Kingdom. It really is astonishing. And of course, they're linked so closely with Washington and the very powerful Israeli lobby over here. Pretty much, they may not get everything for Israel, but they get so much and allow these crimes to go on, supported, just like the financial debacle that we're going through over here right now that's affecting the whole world, Ilan. We talked about that in my first hour with my guest. The criminals are being rewarded and the victims are being punished. Well, it's happening in occupied Palestine. The criminals are being rewarded, Israel, with billions of dollars from the U.S., cheap loans or loans that they don't have to repay, sophisticated weapons, on and on and on and on. And people simply don't know what is going on. And the terrible crime that's being committed, it absolutely is genocide. And it's been going on for over six decades. And it's become a core topic for me, Ilan. I'm not a scholar like you. I came out of small business. I began writing by accident a few years ago. The more I did, the more I wanted to do. I think a lot of reading that I did encouraged me to do more. It became habit forming. It was a good habit that became ingrained and got me to want to do more. And then I became an accidental writer and an even more accidental radio host. And it just obsesses me. I'm in my mid-70s, and this has become my life. It's become my mission. And I simply have to put out good information on vitally important things like the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. And my own opinion, I'm curious what yours is. My own opinion is that peace in the Middle East is impossible unless we can solve this core issue. It has to be solved, or there'll never be peace in the Middle East. I wonder what you feel about that.
Yes, I definitely agree with you. I think it's important also for your listeners to know, those who don't know, but although you did say it in the preface to our conversation, that I was born in Israel, and I lived there for more than 50 years, and I know the good and the bad things about the country. But there's one fact that cannot be refuted, and this is the root of the problem that you were talking about. There is an ideology behind the state of Israel. One can understand where it comes from, and I don't think we have the time to explore it, but that doesn't matter now. One can understand how the Zionist ideology developed out of the history of the persecution of the Jews in Europe. But the end product of that ideology was not only to survive, but also to thrive, to prosper, is by taking over the whole of Palestine and making sure that there isn't one Palestinian left in it. The other side of the coin is that the land of Palestine is the home of the native population of Palestine that lived there for 1,000 years, if not more. They have nothing to do with the persecution of the Jews in Europe, and therefore we're not supposed to pay the price for the victimization of the Jews until the emergence of the Zionist movement in the late 19th century, and definitely after the Holocaust. And it is this basic fact that definitely is ignored in the United States, that the only way of understanding the ideology behind the Israeli policies is that it aims at taking over the whole of Palestine and uprooting every Palestinian who lives in it.
Oh, indeed.
Of course, they cannot do it in a day, they cannot do it everywhere, but they have been doing it in the last 60 years.
Ilan, let's take a break.
Think about the achievements of the Jewish state.
Let's take a break, Ilan, and we'll come right back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
To the News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. I'm on with Alain Pape from London. Alain, let's pick up on what you were talking about. And one point that maybe I can throw in is that absolutely the Jews were persecuted over millennia, but so haven't so many other people at different times and different places. But Israelis have really exploited the issue of the Holocaust, capital H. The Holocaust, like it was a uniquely Jewish issue, a Jewish event, and there were many other Holocausts in history, and some a lot greater than the Jewish Holocaust. The one right here in the U.S., the genocide of the native people here, the native Indians. And I've had Ward Churchill on my program in the past, not this one, but another one in the past, and I think he's written more about it than most anyone I know. And if you take all of the Americas combined, from North America to the tip of South America, nobody knows what the numbers are, but he just does an estimate that it could be in the neighborhood of 100 million people. So if the Nazis exterminated 6 million Jews, that's a terrible crime, and it can't be minimized. But 100 million people is a greater crime. Plus the issue of slavery that we had over here for so many years, hundreds of years, another crime, and I guess you can call that genocide too. So many millions died in the Middle Passage coming over, plus the ones who were captured and never got on the boat because they were killed for whatever reason, or they died. Such crimes, and we need to unite in a common humanity, Alain, because we're really all in this together, and I think the people who inflict human rights abuses on others, maybe in the end we'll have them come back down on their head at some point. I don't know how Israel can go on this way. I think Israel is slowly self-destructing, and they have some very smart people that run things over there. I just can't imagine that they don't begin to come around to this kind of a feeling. If they want to survive as a normal state, then they need to be less of a warrior state and do a lot more to get along with people, including all of the people that live in the country.
I couldn't agree with you more, and I think that we have to understand where comes the Israeli immunity or the impunity of the Jewish state. And I think the immunity has two sources, two main sources. One source is the European source, and I do agree with you about the way you look at the Holocaust, but I think the main point here is that it was a European crime against the Jewish people, and Europe decided very intentionally and very strategically to atone for the crimes it committed against the Jewish people at the expense of the Palestinians. It was a very cynical decision. Instead of coping with what happened in the Holocaust, not only to the Jews, but to Europe as a whole, and I think that that's the first source of immunity, because for many, many years it prevented any serious rebuke and criticism Right. The second source of immunity, of course, is the United States, that picked up from Europe the same message, but this was cemented by two other factors in the United States that do not exist in Europe, or at least are not very important in Europe. One is the Christian Zionist lobby in the United States, the Christian fundamentalists who see the support of the State of Israel as a religious duty, and I don't have to tell your listeners or to you about it, you probably know about it more than I do, but we do know in Israel how important this support is to protect Israel from any criticism and any pressure. And the second is, of course, the Zionist lobby, the AIPAC, who has done a brilliant job from their point of view. Of course, this is not the only source for the power of Israel in the United States, but it definitely plays a role. And all these sources, the European ones and the American ones, are working very well because on the other side, the other world is fragmented, talks a lot but doesn't do much. And the Palestinians, as you pointed out before, have no military power compared to the powerful state of Israel. It's the most the worst kind of imbalance of power one can think of between the Palestinians and the Israelis. And I'm afraid if we do not convince the Western public opinion, especially the American public opinion, to change its point of view and start exerting pressure on Israel, this would not only mean the destruction of Palestine and the Palestinians, it would destabilize the Middle East as a whole, and it can really create a chain reaction that would affect the United States and other places in the West in a way unimaginable and compared to anything that happened. And anything that happened in 2001 would look like a walk in the park compared to things that can still develop as a result for the unwillingness of the West, and especially the United States, to stop the crimes that Israel is committing against the Palestinian people for the sake of both Israelis and Palestinians.
Oh, I agree with that so much, Ilan. I'm very worried about the things that I see going on here, fighting two wars, both criminal wars, illegal wars, the possibility that we could expand and fight a third one against Iran. Just as of August, we targeted Russia using Georgia as a proxy. We need to take a break at the bottom of the hour and then pick up. But these terribly destructive things going on, and I really fear that we are really sinking into a dark pit in this country. Let's take a break and we'll come back.
Okay.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. I'm on with Ilan Pepe. Ilan, I was just mentioning my great concern, and I've written a fair amount on it in a fairly short time. I've only been doing this for a few years, but I see terrible things going on over here. I think the UK, where you are, in so many ways follows the pattern that's set over here. Israel seems to be doing the same thing. Such destructive things, but we see the loss of civil liberties, the tremendous transfer of wealth from the great majority of people to a very tiny elite. What's going on now, the greedy people overstepped themselves and they really got themselves into a mess, and the solution is to use taxpayer money to bail them out. The criminals are being rewarded and the victims are being asked to pay for it. And it's a terrible thing. Along with it, we see democratic values continually being more and more eroded. Some people refer to what's happening now. The political and economic situation is a coup d'etat in process. And however this is going to turn out, whatever endpoint somebody wants to point to, this country will not be the same country anymore. And it will be obvious and people will realize it. And heaven only knows what will happen. But all of these things just absolutely terrify me. What is going on? I'm 74 years old. I never remember anything like this in my earlier years. As you well understand, Ilan, we never lived in a perfect world, not by any means. But we seem to follow policies that just take bad policies and make them worse and worse and worse. And I guess this is the way things descend into despotism. Well, you can take a democracy and turn it into tyranny. I mean, it happened in Weimar Germany in the early 1930s, where despots come along like Adolf Hitler and promise solutions, and people are so desperate that they buy onto anything. Is that what's happening here? Is that what may happen in Israel, in the UK? It doesn't matter which party is running things. They all seem to pretty much follow the same line. Labor, conservatives in the UK, Republicans or Democrats here, Israel, Kadima, or Labor, or Likud, there's barely a dime's worth of difference, among all of them.
Indeed, these are very troubling times, and I think you're right. The magnitude of, the powers that be have now, the financial one, the economic one, the political one, is beyond any power that sort of official dictatorship used to have. I think the most, from the angle of coming back to the issue we're talking about and sort of connecting it to what you've said, in a way, for people who live in Palestine, especially the Palestinians, this is very frustrating indeed, because the main drive nowadays, I think, of most Palestinians is not the drive for revenge or retribution, but rather a search for living normal life in a land that they don't even care anymore what you will call it, provided all the policies of discrimination, all the policies of ethnic cleansing, occupation, and destruction would cease. And everyone, Jews, Muslims, and Christians, would live together in one state. And the most so-called liberal Democrats in the United States, in Israel, and in Europe are the main opponents of that democratic solution. They all argue forcefully for the idea of an ethnic racist Jewish state instead of a democratic state for everyone who lives in it. And I think this gap between the victims, those who are occupied, those who were ethnically cleansed, those who live under the regime of discrimination in Israel, their call for a genuine democracy, their adherence to values that allegedly the United States and the West are standing for, and the support of the United States and the West and Europe for a state that violates every value of this kind, it is, in a nutshell, the problem that you've described, of course, on a global level, which is worse. But I think the only hopeful sign of it is that talking to people in the UK in the civil society, knowing what the Palestinian main impulse is, and talking to some good people in the United States, the only hope is that the political elite, either in the United States or in the West or in Israel, do not represent the majority of the people, and we haven't, that our problem hopefully is only that we haven't found a way of translating genuine positive impulses of civilians into political power, because we all shy political power for very good reason. And I think that this interconnects the case of Israel to the global crisis that you were talking about. This hypocrisy, this double talk of the powers that be in the world, mainly the United States, is no better illustrated than in the case of Israel, where genuine democratic forces are being demonized as terrorists, as the forces of evil, as being part of an axis of evil, and those who are fighting against democracy, against equal rights to everyone, are depicted as our best allies, as the only democracy in the Middle East, and so on. And this charade, I think, is part of this more general charade that you were talking about, of a capitalist society that supposedly everyone has the same means and the same opportunities to succeed or to fail, and so on. So I think sort of a revisiting of the global system can in many ways begin by revisiting our perceptions and ideas about Israel and Palestine.
the things that we're talking about, the facts that we're putting out, it's impossible to get this information in the mainstream. Where you are, it's impossible to get it from the BBC. I think once in a while they make a mistake and they let a little out. But if you get the BBC World Service or the BBC we get here, you just don't get this. You get an Israeli perspective. You don't get an impartial perspective. And for people who are hearing this for the first time, they may be shocked to realize that Palestinians are very normal people. I have Palestinian people who I know. A few are my friends. Two in particular I consider very, very good friends. And I mean, they could be your next door neighbors. They're very normal. They're no different than most all your other friends. And as you say, they simply want to live normal lives, like normal people. And they want to get along, and they don't want conflict. But yet they're beaten down again and again and again and again. And if you slap someone in the face often enough, sooner or later they're going to slap back. But
Absolutely, I keep saying that my greatest bewilderment, my greatest surprise is how little the impulse for revenge is on the Palestinian side, given what we know about their history. In fact, this is the main source of hope and optimism, is that unlike other cases where you even felt that victimized people or colonized people were justified in going on a campaign of retribution and revenge, although it might not have been wise politically, this doesn't even exist in the case of the Palestinians. God knows why. I mean, they have every right to feel much more revengeful than they do. And I think that this is a window of opportunity that may be closed, because every passing day of an abuse in the checkpoint, demolition of houses, deportation of people, killing of civilians, with every day of such a criminal policy taking place, we are getting one day far from the possibility of reconciliation if things would change, or fundamentally change in Israel and Palestine. And so I think it's not only that they are absolutely normal people wishing to live a normal life. They have been under a regime of occupation, ethnic cleansing, dispossession, and discrimination for longer than any other people I know in modern times. I don't think many people in the United States realize this, that the duration of the Palestinian suffering, for how long they have been under such circumstances. It's not 1 year or 2 years. It's been 60 years and even longer than that for some of them. And it hasn't ceased for one day, and it not only doesn't cease, I think it gets worse by the day. And probably only visiting the place, not that it's easy nowadays, only visiting the place and seeing the whole city, like the city of New Jersey, being treated as one concentration camp, where there is one gate and only the Israeli wardens have the gate, the keys to the gate, and thinking of living like this for years on end, I think only that kind of visual evidence would begin to explain to people what the Palestinians have been going through under the rule of the so-called only democracy in the Middle East. And this knowledge, as you rightly say, which is people have no access to, should be disseminated through your program to any alternative media we have, so that the true picture of what goes on in Israel and Palestine would finally get to the American taxpayers, because the oppression is very much financed by their money.
Alan, this is a topic I keep coming back to. I think I've discussed this topic on my program more than any other. I want to cover a broad range of things because so much is going on. But I've had James Petras on a few times. He's coming back in October to talk about his new book, Zionism, Militarism, and the Decline of U.S. Power, the Great Power of the Israeli Lobby. We talked about his past book on the same topic, the power of Israel in the United States. and the tremendous influence that Israel and the Israeli lobby here has over U.S. policy, that they can really influence these terrible, destructive things that are going on and affecting people so harshly. One of which, you talk about genocide in Gaza. We've talked about it on my program, so people who listen regularly, I think, know this. But how many people in this country, and even in the UK where people are better informed, how many people realize that Gaza is under siege now? They are literally under a medieval siege with very brief let-ups, and plus all the attacks that Israel commits against Gaza. I mean, just imagine the Palestinians fight back with these crude rockets, small weapons, kids throwing rocks, and Israel attacks them with sophisticated tanks on the ground. God knows what kind of weapons on the ground, F-16 aircraft firing air-to-surface missiles and striking people's homes, killing innocent people. And not just a few times. This happens over and over again. People have no idea about this. Gaza, I have no idea just how bad things are in Gaza now, but I've written about the siege of Gaza and the poverty level absolutely skyrocketing and the deprivation and human misery just beyond comprehension, where people may not get enough food to eat. They have a hard time getting any kind of medical care. They're not let out if they have a desperate illness and they need to get to a facility that can take care of them. Israel will not allow them out, or they can stop a pregnant mother at a checkpoint, desperate to get to a doctor to deliver her baby, and the Israeli soldiers simply won't allow her to pass. So she either gives birth and survives on the spot, or she gives birth and dies, and it happens. I mean, these things go on all the time, and people don't know about this. Israel is supposed to be a civilized country. I've made the comment, it's about time it acted like one.
Absolutely, and I think you've really put you pointed your finger to the right point. If you talk to Palestinians in Gaza, and I often do, and I try to visit as much as I can, although it's not very easy, this trip, you will find out that they will never claim, for instance, that what they are undergoing is the worst that can happen to human beings today in the globe. And maybe it is, but it doesn't matter. That's not the point. They would make a point that they're probably other places like Darfur and where terrible things are happening. Their point is that when you talk about every other place in the world where the international community knows about crimes, they call a spade a spade. The criminal is called a criminal. The victims are called victims, and at least there is a recognition of the crime. They say they're the only ones who have to, that nobody recognizes that they are victims of such a huge crime. And I think this is far more destructive than even the actions themselves. The fact that there is a sense in Gaza, and it really reinforces the despair, there is a sense in Gaza that they will never convince your average American listener that they are under siege for more than 8 years, that they have been starved by Israel for more than 8 years, that they have no medicine, no commodities, nowhere to work, and this is as a result of a very cynical and callous policy. The main worry is that they have no way of conveying this reality to your listeners, and therefore your government, the American government, would continue to support financially, economically, militarily, and politically their wardens, the people who execute that policy, that indeed after 8 years we can say quite confidently that this is a policy of genocide. And I think it is this the same happened to the Palestinians in 1948. Half of Palestine's population was forced out, uprooted. Half of Palestine's villages and towns were destroyed. Thousands of people were massacred, and the world watched and denied on the spot what it saw, and nobody ever believed the Palestinians. This is what happened, although there were many eyewitnesses on the ground, and everybody who participated in that horrible crime in 48 knew about it. Definitely anyone who was a victim of that knew about it. It's the same story from 1948 again. This destruction of Palestine, this is chapter 2 or chapter 3 of the destruction of Palestine, and again the Western media, with the assistance of the Western academia, portrays it as a terrorist campaign of the Palestinians, demonizes them, instead of doing what it should do in such cases. Salvage them, help them, come to their aid by exerting pressure in Israel. The United States has the power to stop these Israeli policies for the sake of the United States itself and for the sake of the people who live in Israel and Palestine, both Jews and Palestinians.
Oh, absolutely, Len. Israel could not do what it does without the support of Washington, and that's more than just the financial support. We're coming up to another break, but Washington could change everything going on if it chose to do it, but it absolutely supports what's going on, and that just compounds everything. Let's take a break and then finish on up. The hour just flies by. Welcome back to the News Hour. Alan, we just have a few minutes left. I want to encourage listeners to get your book, The Ethnic Cleansing of Palestine. The story that you tell, it's hair-raising. I don't know what to say about it. I had a lot to say about it when I wrote about what you did, but it's a story so extreme and so shocking that it's hard to believe that it's true. I think if a scriptwriter try to present a story like this as fiction to a Hollywood producer, the producer would turn it down, saying, "Well, this story is preposterous. You know, nobody would believe it." But the story is true. It's outrageous, and you documented it in such vivid detail. And if people want to understand the roots of what's going on now, they should read your book and realize that this was the beginning, and nothing has changed ever since.
Indeed, I think that the very title of the book is in a way the key to what I was trying to do, the ethnic cleansing. This is not a chance, a choice of words. Ethnic cleansing is a crime against humanity in the international law, very well-defined crime against humanity. And it has very clear features to it, an ideology, a strategy, a leadership, executioners, and victims who usually are a refugee. And it fits like a hand to a glove when you apply this idea, this concept, to the case of Israel and Palestine. And it does not only fit to the story I describe in the book, which focuses on the dispossession of the Palestinians in 1948. I think it analyzes very well the ideological infrastructure of the state of Israel even today. Nothing has changed in this respect. I said it before, but we can highlight, sort of stress it over the end of our conversation again. This is a very focused part of the Zionist ideology. The idea that the whole land of Palestine, that is Israel, the West Bank, and the Gaza Strip, have to be a Jewish state with no Palestinians in it. It's a simple idea, but it needed a complex history and a very sophisticated state apparatus with international backing to make it a reality. And 48 is just the worst chapter in this history, but I'm afraid we are now at the, witnessing the next terrible chapter in it. And the main success of such a policy is to blind the Western world in particular, and the United States even more so, to blind it, to not to allow it to see it for what it really is, and to describe it as something very, very different. And what I hoped the book would do would show that there are foundations for this policy. It was, and that the most important thing that happened in 48 was not only the fact that the Palestinians were dispossessed, but that the world, the Western world, and the United States reaffirmed for the Israelis that if they are doing what they're doing to the Palestinians, they will never be rebuked, they will never be criticized. expand the benefit of Israel to their ideas of world stability, or for how best to serve their strategic interests as they see it.
Oh,
it's
indeed.
Not just about oil and wealth. It's also about the demonization of Arabs and Islam that started then, and which is now the root of the kind of cultural struggles that we have today that could easily be avoided, and the energy of the world could easily be directed to more important things, such as the ecological problems, the problems of poverty, and social injustice.
Oh, indeed, Alain. I've got to cut you off. We're just about out of time, and they're going to cut us off. I thank you so much for coming on. There's so much more we didn't get a chance to talk about.
That's all right.
Thank you, Alain.
Thank you very much, Stephen. It was a pleasure.
Oh, my honor and pleasure indeed.
Thank you very much. Bye.